Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Right, before we get going, I need to remind you all, it is seven season, and the Egg Chasers have got their own sevens team attending North Dorset Sevens. If you want to come and join us as a social drinking member, which is, I think, all of us, or one of the few of us which actually play, let us know. Drop us a line at contacteggchasers@gmail.com. The criteria to join is you must be the opposite to the All Blacks, because in our team, it's only dickheads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon, as we are 52 weeks of the year, every single Monday morning. In this actual case, we are sat at, what's the time exactly? 9:26 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Unusually. So, it's a strange podcast, and well, this just goes to demonstrate, why we're still here after 10 years, because even when there are reasons why we could easily just swerve a podcast, we make it happen.
We do swerve podcasts occasionally, but usually for good rugby reasons. So what's your good rugby reason, Tim?
The reason why I'm not podcasting tonight, after all the games, is because today is the day of the Lancashire Cup final.
There we go.
And Raffy Quirk's Broughton Park under-16s are playing against Furzwood Waterloo.
Now. Obviously, what I mean to ask is, are the boys excited? But let's skip that. Are you excited? It's your final.
I am excited.
You should be excited.
I am. I honestly don't mind what the result is. I'm proud of the lads, and we're having our presentation this season.
Has your media guy told you to say that? I'm proud of the lads.
Taking it one game at a time. The boys done well. No, we're having our presentations after the match this evening at the club. That's why I can't do the podcast, because we just want to sort of mark the end of the season. I'm honestly dead chuffed. I hope they go out and...
Are they confident?
Yeah, I think so. Last year, they'd be the first to admit, in the semi-final, they just bottled it a bit.
Yeah.
Just sort of got scared. And everyone will remember playing in a game where they kind of got overawed.
Now, have you been able to select your absolute best team? Is there any element of inclusion going on in your selection?
We had the decision, do we play the lads that play rugby league as well, who don't play every week,
yeah,
don't train every week, but play when they can. And we took the decision not to play those guys.
You've gone for cohesion over pure talent.
So are they
going
to watch, or are they not?
Some of them are coming to watch, some of them aren't. But that was a tough call, because there's a couple of those lads that are just amazing players.
Oh.
But we thought, I don't know. I don't think they're going to play next year.
Yeah.
And so kind of went, right, it was one of those decisions. Do you go for just trying to win and you might upset some of the lads that are there every single week? Or do you try and win with the lads that have been the core part of the team and
so
will be part of the team in the years ahead?
With the lads you don't think will stay, that might be the thing that makes them stay.
Maybe.
But you don't know, do you? We had the same thing in our underage team. We had a load of boys play from Rydal and they were brilliant. And, you know, do you play them when you know the borders and they're going home? Do you play them? You know, you just don't know, do you? Don't know.
Yeah.
Exciting times.
So it was a tough one anyway. But Raffy Quirk came down to training on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Mm. Which was nice I got all the lads in the first team changing room. We were training on the first team pitch. And we said, well, we'll just have a chat before we go out to train. And Raffy Quirk strolls in. The look on their faces was awesome.
Perfect.
So just gave him he was talking about the Premiership final and how he felt. And you will feel different, but... but that's a good thing, and just like nice messages to hear, like, because you must remember playing in games where you were shitting it.
Yeah, definitely. But it's beforehand is the worst, because you build it up,
yeah,
and you get nervous and you get the butterflies in your stomach, and then when you actually step on the pitch, and certainly after the first tackle, the first contact, it's just back to being a normal game. You just forget about the occasion.
Don't you love how rugby, and we're talking about under-16s here, and you feel you're probably talking about when you were in your Colts Cup final.
It's
the same. I imagine the fact that to hear Raffy Quirk talking about it, it's exactly the same whatever level you play at. I love that about sport.
Yeah. I never got nervous playing any game at all.
Really?
Because I got excited for it. Really excited, but I never get nervous.
I think there's a fine line between nerves and excitement. And they're one and the same thing. But
as Scott Quinnell said, those butterflies you feel now, when you walk out on that pitch, they'll turn into dragons.
I've got a sort of gallows humour thing. The more the bigger the game, the more jovial and relaxed I become, really.
Well, that's pretty cool. I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't play at a higher level, was I did not have the mentality for those big matches. I remember Bath University varsity match, and massive crowd, and I just got spooked, and I wasn't in the moment. I could feel myself sort of out of my own body a little bit.
Tell you what, like, the biggest crowd I've been in front of, and it was not a competitive game, but it was cool to do it, was playing Ben Moon's Testimonial, because there must have been 3,000 there. Yeah. I mean, it was a big, I mean, one part of Sunday Park was rammed. It was absolutely rammed. And other than you think there's a lot of people, it doesn't make a shred of difference once you're on the field.
No, agreed. But the difference in mentality, and yeah, again,
I mean, there's no pressure in that.
As I was growing up, I was the better player than my brother. And it's one thing my brother always says, like, my nephews will say to me, Uncle Tim, did you play professional rugby like Daddy?
The professional broadcaster lads.
Yeah, and my brother always says he should have done. But that was the biggest thing. I remember calling Nick the night before his Premiership debut. He was playing for London Irish at Leicester. And I was projecting my own nerves and stuff, I was thinking, oh, he'll be shitting himself. Called him. He's like, I can't wait. I cannot wait. I'm so excited. It's like, okay, fine. That's why you're a Premiership player.
Exactly.
Anyway, we've been talking around it enough. We've got some actual Premiership rugby, and it's proper business time at the minute.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the two games which I watched most intently, I watched them, and I think what was interesting about them is the teams were exactly according to form and according to character. I don't think I learned a single thing about either of these two teams. Maybe a little bit about Leicester, but they're done now, so it doesn't matter what we know about Leicester.
Leicester are done.
They are. Are they mathematically out of it now?
Technically not, but it would take some miracle. So they are nine points behind, and they have 10 points available to them.
It's done. They're done.
So
they're done.
They are done.
I think possibly when you look at the matchups and the fixtures, it might be mathematical.
It might be.
I think it is mathematical. They're out.
It is. Even if it's not quite mathematical,
they're playing to try and be in the Champions Cup next year. That's the only carrot dangling for Leicester Tigers.
Which is a massive issue for them.
Like, especially as eight teams get in out of 10. So they're going to get in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, actually.
Oh,
they
yeah,
won't they be caught by Gloucester,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, they can't.
So Leicester have got nothing but pride to play for.
Gloucester could mathematically overtake them because they've got a game in hand, but that won't happen.
No.
So they're just going to be in this, like, nothingness zone.
Yeah.
Not good enough for the Champions Cup, but going to have one of the lowest rankings in the Champions Cup, which is going to mean they have tougher game. So, it's a failure of a season.
That's their motivation, lads. Let's avoid Leinster next and to lose.
Win two games and you've got win the next two games, you've got a shot at avoiding the hardest draw.
Yeah.
Christ, it's a big ask, isn't it, for Harlequins and Northampton just to keep on the treadmill now. So they've got to. I mean, one of these two teams had to win this weekend. I think their overall ambition was to win and not get injured. So I don't think there's any injuries, so that's great news.
Yeah, I can't recall anyone going off with an injury. That's good.
Now we've got build-up all over again. So you've got the whole, I mean, what a season that they're having, if you think about it. Those quarterfinals were amazing. They've got a Twickenham game, which is pretty cool, and now they're into the big boy phases of the semi-finals.
I think we've just seen, this weekend, the two semi-finals. And I think what has maybe been the outcome of the matches means that we now, it may flip, and rather than it, the semi-final being Bath v Saracens at the Rec, it'll be Saracens v Bath at Stonex.
Yeah. Mm. And similarly, Northampton will have a home fixture against Harlequins.
Harlequins. I think those are the semi-finals, and they're pretty, as we've seen, they're really, really good matchups.
Although Bristol might still have something to say about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Form team in the Premiership.
Absolutely. And they showed some proper minerals. And in recent weeks, they've been... Well, I mean, that win over Newcastle was embarrassing.
It is embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. Brilliant for Bristol, but they were just shredding them. But this, they actually won with grit.
Yeah, it was a weird game. Because
I've not seen this, but they were 17-0 down.
19-0 down. With
12 minutes to go.
Wow.
And it didn't look like they were going to win. The substitutions were weird. The whole team is a bit weird in my mind. So they brought on lads who are more like, you know, the sort of lads that will shred a game. Like Harry Thacker. And actually, he did do that at one point.
Old Grey and Harry Thacker. That is a brilliant hooker duo, isn't it?
I love Old Grey. I mean, I was a little bit down on him because he went to... Did he go to Bordeaux for a little bit?
Yeah, for a bit.
Did he go to Bordeaux or did he go somewhere else?
Somewhere in France. I think it might have been. Anyway.
I loved him in Wasps. I was just wondering, has he gone off the boil a bit? Because he's not had regular game time. He's been in France. He's bounced around a bit. He looks legit. I love him, though. He's just got so much energy. And you're right. So then to interchange him with Harry Thacker. But they didn't win it using their shape. They didn't win it using their wide attacking game. They actually won it close quarter fighting in the last of 22, which you wouldn't expect, particularly in a game where you win it in the last 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. Because I think they got soundly beaten up for most of it. They were deprived of possession. The thing you've got to level at Leicester, though, is they've just got no cutting edge. You know, they can fight you all day long. They can kick territory. I guess the Castle Collins tries were good. But where is that attacking edge? Where is their ability to shred defences? They just don't have it.
When you look at their centres, they are very direct, aren't they?
They are.
So the whole team is direct, as you say.
Who was centres this week? It was Kelly, can play a bit.
Kelly and Scott.
Kelly and Scott, but Catter's there and Porter. They're all kind of robust centres, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, Thokunosinga would be the one who... on paper has the cutting edge, although we've not seen much of it this season.
And he's leaving.
Is he?
Mm. Where's he off to?
I'm not sure. Mm. I just because it reminded me, Kirk, friend of the pod, sent us after last week the quotes from Steve Diamond in the wake of that defeat to Bristol.
Oh, I've read. I've only read it. I've not actually heard it spoken. It didn't read very well.
Diamond travelled back to... This is the quote. Diamond travelled back to the northeast on the team bus and was quizzed... this is what Kirk has written to us. Quizzed by Rugby Past about what that 500-kilometre trip... Oh, it's Rugby Past, so it's like...
Yeah, it's New Zealanders.
New Zealand, right. 500 kilometres. Anyway, what was like? Diamond quipped, "Well, there were high-fiving. We stopped off at a couple of brothels on the way back and bought loads of booze. What do you think it was like, Liam?" "The bus, there wasn't deathly silence, but it wasn't far off. It was like going to a funeral for 6 hours."
Booze in a brothel.
I think Kirk said that just because he wanted me to do the diamond. Steve Diamond, King of the North.
So ridiculous. It's such a ridiculous quote.
Are legit quotes.
Yeah, they are.
That's
what I'd
oh, really?
Read.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's absolutely nuts.
Tell you what, they're going to have a rude awakening this off-season. They're going to have a rude awakening because they just don't care enough.
They've got to do something. They've got to do... But I don't know what they do because they've got in this phase of just being a selling club. Like the
do
best,
you,
like
you
Pepper,
think they
Brantingham...
Have enough money? Spent on their salary cap, enough money in there to afford Exeter's team contract for contract. Is there 1 point something under the cap, right?
Possibly. Exeter are apparently 2.2 million under. That's the rumour. That's what I've heard. I don't know, which is almost half.
Yeah. Mm. That is huge. So, like, it can be done. And he's going to have to go shopping in Northumbria University. But that's where he's got to go.
Well, yeah, when you say they don't care enough, I'd say that it's the owner, which, and I don't begrudge him this because it is a money pit. No. You know, we can talk about your boat and money pits.
Oh, but, yeah.
And you've washed your hands of that.
Well, that's exactly what the Newcastle owner should do. He should wash his hands of it.
Yeah, rather than keep it as an ongoing concern, but doesn't care enough to give away his kids' inheritance.
Exactly. But you've got to find a buyer.
Yeah.
Because what's the if you own an asset and you've not got a willing buyer and you want to dispose of it, let it go bankrupt. Like, as it just fold it.
Yeah.
Those are kind of your options.
I think the Newcastle ownership just have to go. Now, there was talk about Saudi money, wasn't there? So they're obviously trying to engineer something. But it's such a rubbish proposition. I mean, if you want to be uninspired by rugby, Newcastle's the club that you go to. You know, it's not particularly well followed. The stadium is not particularly great.
Well,
I mean,
not the side that you see on the telly, because I never understand why they haven't got the TV cameras on the little stand so you see the big stand.
Yeah. Just put a bit of scaffold.
It's a little bit of PR.
Above the little stand.
Yeah.
It's just not a well-run operation.
But the way to do it, the way to start it is, instead of just being a selling club and letting your three most talented young players in Brantingham, Johnson and Pepper go, retain them. Start building a team around them. That's what Exeter, yeah, that's how they've started doing it.
You can literally be successful in almost any Premiership club if you retain your youngsters. Mm. Well, maybe not always. I mean, I think about the youngsters at Sale let go, and we thought that would be the core of a team, and actually it didn't matter that Mike Haley went. I don't think he was probably good enough. I don't think Will Addison was probably good enough to be that core.
Well, and
maybe the lads before that were.
Yeah, and if you had hindsight, which, I mean, it was obvious, and we were saying it at the time, but if you were the people that were running London Irish, and you look at all the young players that came through, and then you consider the 900k a year they was paying Adam Coleman.
Yeah.
The £500,000 they were paying, who was the sort of lock back
Steve row? Maffey.
Steve Maffey, yeah.
He's on a lot of money.
That was the kind of money they were paying for players. And they had all this incredible production line of youngsters that they could have invested a fraction of that into. And you never know, they may have even still be here as a result.
I was going to say, the problem with that was all of their talent was sort of located in one place, the outside backs. So they didn't, I mean...
Well, you say that now, yes, you're right. And they may have had to have bolstered their front five. Look at the lads that have gone on from London Irish. There's absolute superstars that are front five forwards. Tariq Hafir.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that his name, the prop?
Yeah.
You've got Opoku Fajor. Oh, no, he was Wasps. No, the other. There's another prop.
I always like...
there is. I'm trying to think what his name is.
What is his name? The loose head. Who went to Ealing.
Hoskin.
Not Hoskins. He went to Saracens, didn't he? And then he might be somewhere else now.
I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, I know the boy. Yeah, I've got him in my head now. He made the England squad.
Yeah, yeah. Which, as a loose head, is really hard to do. I can't remember his name.
He's a massive man.
Yeah.
Huge guy.
Double-barrel surname.
I can't remember.
Yes,
I can't remember. but they had Chunya Munga, who's at Northampton now, yep. Locke.
Yeah, well,
they've just got a bunch of, actually, front five forwards that are really good. So anyway.
Cunningham South, who is a superstar.
Cunningham South, oh my goodness. Best of the lot. Yeah, I mean, that's a head.
Matt Rutchinson's a good player. Ollie Cracknell. I mean, Ollie Cracknell had moved, legitimately moved, rather than gone bankrupt and moved.
Yeah, but Harlequins have got an absolute superstar in Cunningham South. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. So anyway, you're right. Fiscal mismanagement is one thing, but it's even worse when you could have
spent
within your means by keeping a brilliant bunch of youngsters together.
Yeah, you keep your local lads, and I think that pretty much attracts a lot of the local crowd. And then you supplement them with good foreign talent. That's how you do it.
Will Goodrick Clark.
That's the one.
Yeah, Newcastle. Not said a single good thing about them all season. I don't think we will for the rest of the season. Maybe next season we'll see.
Two games left.
The last game of the season is Gloucester.
Maybe.
So, I mean, they'll see that as their best chance of a win.
Will they go down as the worst team in Premiership history?
If they don't get a win, then yeah.
Because,
well, other than that London Welsh team.
But London Welsh...
They didn't get a win.
They get a win, and they also have two more games to concede more points. So... points conceded per game would be the one for me.
And that London Welsh team has got to be worse.
Yeah.
The
London Welsh team that came up and kept the bulk of their Championship team together did all right, and almost,
yeah.
If it wasn't for that ineligible player, the penalised points, Sale could have been the ones that got relegated.
Do you remember the name of the ineligible player? I remember one of his names.
No.
It was Tyson something.
Yes.
Can't remember. I think Tyson was his first name.
Hmm. He was a winger, back three.
No, he's a scrum off.
Was he?
Yeah, I'm sure he's a scrum off.
Okay.
Tyson. Hang on, is that right?
Anyway, Sale were dreadful that year and probably another year would have got relegated. But the London Welsh team, where they went, right, we're in the Premiership, let's buy a load of people to play in an empty Kassam Stadium in Oxford. That was dreadful.
Absolutely horrendous. So yeah, Leicester have done. It's not really much point in talking about Leicester other than a bloody good side. They were probably the best side in the Premiership around Christmas, I'd have said. If you asked me who would you least like to play, it would have been Leicester. It's a massive collapse from them. They need to do better with this team as well. Because the other element of this is you can't keep good teams together forever. Salary cap will not allow you to do it. So I think they've got another year or so. But even so, like next year, Visa's gone. Someone else big leaving them as well. Got a feeling that there is. But they're just not going to... You just need to win now. With that sort of team, you need to win now.
Well, I'd say the same about Bristol. I think they've got a big change in the guard with...
Sinclair's gone?
Yeah.
So players confirmed.
Actually, maybe not as many.
Players confirmed out of Leicester this year. Jasper Visa going to Japan. Thokkonesinger going to Ospreys. Porter, Richardson the prop, and Matt Scott all leaving.
So not that much.
Van Vijk going to Bath. And Nick Dolly going back to Australia to Western Force.
That's all right. They've got that good young hooker. They've got a couple of good young
Charlie
hookers. Charlie Clare and the kid who came through last year.
Yeah.
The guy from Wolverhampton Rugby Club.
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember his name. God, we're not doing well today for names.
It's too early. I've not had enough caffeine yet.
Your coffee machine's broken as well, which didn't help.
Yeah, it's got £400 worth of new parts in that coffee machine. It still doesn't work. So we replaced all the good parts. Just the bad part we left in. Okay.
I'm just working out. So the points per game.
Yeah.
Of London Irish, points conceded per game of London Irish versus Newcastle. London Welsh in 2015 versus Newcastle this year. Who do you think is worse?
London Welsh.
Newcastle.
So Newcastle this year have conceded 514 points across 15 games
That is awful.
So 515, but that's 34 points per game on average.
That's bad. Can I just give one bit of context here? I know they play on an artificial pitch, which is half the games, but it has been weather-wise the worst season I can remember.
It has.
Which would mitigate some of the points.
So yeah, 34 points per game, 514 across the current 50. Oh, this doesn't count last game actually. This has not been updated, but they only conceded how many points this?
Well, Sale. They played Sale today.
So it is up today. Ignore me. So they have got three games to go. London Welsh in 2015 conceded 1,021. Oh, wow. Double the points with seven games more played.
And just to your point about bad weather, Tim, that stops you scoring points, not defending points.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's...
I guess it does limit the other team a bit.
It does limit the other team's attack, doesn't it?
But then I guess if the other team are just doing driving mauls, that's pretty easy to score.
Oh, 1,000 points.
Concede 500 points in two games.
Yeah, 500 points in three games.
Do
you think Piri Weepu, when people ask him about about his rugby career, he ever brings up that season?
I actually think if you've got Piri Weepu to do it after dinner speaking, hardly any of it would be about the All Blacks. It'd all be about London Welsh. I mean, if you want, if anyone ever tells me about or asks me about my job and my experiences, I don't tell them about all my wins and all the good things I've done. I tell them about the time where some criminal enterprise, which basically ended up being, well, maybe that's a bit too strong and I need to be careful what I say, but they sent me up to, as a 21-year-old, these chances sent me to run my own office in Richmond, which dealt with basically tax avoidance schemes. And I was there for 6 months before I was like, this is dreadful. This is absolutely dreadful. And the person that had that office before me, allegedly, the rumour goes, one of the footballers who he sold a tax scheme to, who he couldn't afford, paid his fees by leaving the keys to his Porsche at reception and then walked home.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So you always talk about the absolute worst things you've seen. Thank God I wasn't there very long.
Here we go. I've got up the last game of the season from London Welsh in that 2014-15 season. They got hammered by Saracens, 68 points to 17.
You can try and get us to name some of the players.
Can you name anyone who played for London Welsh that day?
Yeah, Josh McNally.
Josh McNally, good shout. Yes.
Which year?
2014-15. Last game of the season, March 2015.
So, Ollie Barkley.
Ollie Barkley was at 10, so 2 out of 2 so far.
So, Tim Mungnor?
No.
What?
Not in the 23.
Sebastian Jewell?
He's played 15.
Yeah, yep. Tom
Very
Voice.
Good.
No Voice.
Ooh, interesting.
Oh, yeah, Tom Voice.
Epi.
Tyone.
No. Another Epi who played 8.
So you're thinking, your name's slightly wrong.
Oh.
But it's very close. He was an enormous man.
Yeah, him, he played.
A Petit Fenua,
that's the one.
A Petit Fenua.
Of Leicester and Newcastle. I want to say the guy who used to decapitate people for Scarlets, he played 6, and his name escapes me. Another Tongan Fijian. No, Tongan Samoan.
No, not playing in the back row. Not, it doesn't mean he wasn't there, just not in this game.
Okay, so you've got Tim Mulnar.
So you've missed an obvious one playing.
Gavin Henson.
Playing at 12. No, Henson's not in there. Obvious one.
Tom May.
Tom May playing at 12.
Yeah, that was not a good time for Tom May.
Right. There's not that many other recognisable names.
Who'd be the winger?
You're not getting the wingers. You are not getting the wingers. There's no chance.
I'm not even sure. Who are the props then?
Props, no, not getting the props.
Let's come back to it. I'll pepper some names at you throughout.
Okay, I'll leave that tab open. Okay. Right, where were we? We were kind of bouncing around.
Do you know what?
Can
I just jump straight into the meaty, salacious topic of Carl Dixon and Danny Kerr and that decision?
Yes.
Well, it gets worse. It gets worse.
Go on.
The cover-up is real. Because Danny Kerr's... Right, so I watched this game on the BT Sport Extended Highlights Package.
TNT,
yeah. Discovery Plus.
Whoever they are. So the first try is scored by Luke Northmore.
Yeah.
That is 3 minutes in.
Yeah.
Right? Then it skips over, and I'm looking at the score, because it just jumps, doesn't it, from highlight to highlight. And it's an hour long. So it
yeah,
should be like,
they're good. It shows you almost all of the action.
Almost all of it. And I look at the score, and the yellow card is at 0-0-0-0, and it's 17 minutes in. You don't even get to see Danny Kerr's first infraction. Right? And then I'm waiting for the second one, because I've seen it on the WhatsApp group that he's done something else. Wasn't even referenced. The cover-up is real.
It was about 55, 60 minutes in.
Yep, yeah,
wasn't
didn't
it?
See it.
So, you will have got the commentary from the WhatsApp, but for the benefit, so we're all at the same place. Danny Kerr gets a first yellow card for not lowering his height and head-on-head contact. It was basically Brian O'Driscoll in commentary when that happened said, well, it is the letter of the law. It was one of those. And it's so fine.
It was quite remarkable because it was Courtney Laws he was tackling, who is nearly a foot taller. He's 6'7" versus 5'8" or 9".
He did well.
He did well to get his head high enough.
Yeah.
But it was... Fine with Jacko's assessment.
But this
second one? What was the second one?
Second one, Northampton Saints, who are at this point 6 points behind.
Yeah, it was a one-score game.
It was a one-score game, or I think it was a one-score game. Anyway, it was close. The game was close enough that it was a significant... Yeah, it was a six-point. Scoring a try would have put them ahead. Northampton Saints make a break from inside their own half, manage to get the ball. Harlequins are scrambling at sixes and sevens. They get the ball to about 5-10 metres away from Harlequins' line. Danny Kerr, as cynical... I mean, smart. He probably prevented 7 points. As cynical as you like... dives off his feet, across the ruck, grabs the ball, takes out Alex Mitchell at the same time. I mean, and Carl Dixon, as he's running over, you see it clear as day. And we can't sort of assume what Carl Dixon was doing. But all I will say is, to everyone watching, it looked like he was reaching for his card. And then at the very last moment, when he recognised it was Danny Kerr, he pulled his hand out, fudged it, went over to the touch judge, who's 20 metres away from it, whereas Carl Dixon's right there,
right next to it.
And then goes to the TMO and asks advice and manages to explain away why somehow it's not a yellow card. Harlequin's quick as a flash, substitute Danny Kerr, who smirks as he runs off. Will Porter comes on, scores 2 tries.
And defends one.
And the Dixon explanation to Laws was, unsatisfactory, because Laws was rightly incensed, because that was a clear professional foul that was a yellow card. Absolutely clear. And that would... It doesn't necessarily mean Northampton win the game, but it's a big turning point.
Yeah,
and certainly Will Porter, who scores the two tries late on, he never gets on the pitch.
Just so you know, on Will Porter comes on anyway. They find someone else to bring off. If Danny Kaye gets red, Will Porter's still on the field.
Yeah,
you're
fair,
right.
Fair.
So, I mean, I hate when people start accusing professional referees of things. Well, it doesn't look good.
Well, so I haven't mentioned the fact he was a former Quins player at all on this podcast, but that was the talk in the days building up to the game once Carl Dixon was announced for this one. I don't think that had any bearing on it. He used to be a teammate of Danny Kerr's.
Yeah, yeah.
Danny Kerr was a youngster when Carl Dixon...
Well, I mean, of course, his brother played all of his career at Northampton. He's got very strong ties with them.
I haven't mentioned that. It's unfortunate that there's that conversation bubbling along and his relationship with Danny Kerr and this happens. I just think, rather than talking about who he used to play for, it was just dreadful officiating.
Yeah, and it was bottling a big decision, I think. I wouldn't read anything into the Harlequins link or the Danny Kerr link. I think
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay, so we do want referees just to enforce the rules. We all know we want them to enforce rules. That is the optimum scenario. But I do kind of go a little soft when it comes to, well, he's already got a yellow card. Can I get him off the hook type thing? Now, it depends what it is. And it does sound like this is something which, I mean, this is actually the sort of thing I want yellow cards for. Mm. Professional fouls, you know.
Cynical, stopping a great attacking opportunity.
Yeah.
Well, here's one thing it did bring to mind is I think he's fudged it. Only Carl Dixon knows what happened. He'll argue differently. But as far as I'm concerned, he fudged it. And the reason he fudged it is because it would have been a second yellow and therefore a red. And it made me think, the only reason we have two yellows equals a red is because of football. Why do we do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Why not just another 10 minutes? If it's a red card offence, it's a red card offence. You're off the field. If it's a yellow card offence, well, the punishment is 10 minutes. In football...
Correct.
Because in football, they don't have
there
the sin bin.
There is no sin bin.
No,
yeah.
No, I completely agree with you.
I bet you, I guarantee you, we've said this on this podcast, it will bubble out. And it will be something in about 18 months' time. It's brought in two yellows do not
to be
equal
fair
a red.
To us, so we have said this before.
We have said this before.
Something which I've just kind of forgot about it. No, you're right. I mean, you'd never pick a player who voluntarily spends 20 minutes off the field. So it would sort itself out.
Mm.
I tell you, another guy who got two yellow cards and was red carded was Mike Brown.
And his offences were not as bad as Danny Kerr's.
No, they weren't. Was one head on head? Someone had a head on head.
One that was just like Danny Kerr. The first one was head on head.
I don't think it was head on head either.
No, it didn't. It looked much on Bernard Janssen van Rensburg.
Yeah.
It looked much less obvious.
How long can he play for? Because I still think he's playing tremendous rugby. Tremendous rugby.
He's great.
Mm.
I hope he doesn't give up just because age or something, or
well,
just because somebody says, "Yeah, we need to move on to the next guy." If he's still playing that level of rugby, he should just carry on for as long as he can.
Well, I think the question is how small an amount of money is Mike Brown prepared to play for?
Yeah,
that's probably what it comes down to.
Because we got the salary cap report.
Oh, it's good. Good opportunity to do this. Yeah,
23 season, and you do notice there is a so with age because they break it down by age averages and means as well, rather than looking at medians or modes. But with average, goes up by age until the 29 to 31 bracket, and then after that,
it
declines with age. Yeah.
So you've not seen this, JB. What would you guess would be the highest paid on average by the mean and the lowest paid
positions?
So I go through basically three sort of criteria, which is rare skill, rare size, and... where there's only one of those types of player. Does that make sense? So like the specialists. So a few years ago, it was hooker, and that makes sense because a lot of people can play hooker. It's not a particularly rare skill, not particularly rare size. In fact, because the nature of that position, you don't want to be too big. Mm. I mean, you can be big, but you're never going to be 6'7".
Well, the two very talented hookers that we referenced before in Ogre and Thacker, they're both about 5'8", 5'9".
Yeah.
They are not big men at all.
If you had a bell curve, like the distribution of height, like hooker probably fits into the, you know, the overall population at, well, probably...
about average in height?
Yeah, the most populous.
Yeah.
So you can get hookers anywhere. Like literally any building site, you can find some good size hookers, right? So you can't find good size locks. So for me, it'd be hooker. The other one, which people are surprised about, would be scrum half. And the reason I say scrum half is because you can't really play a scrum half in your back line. Like, they're very specialist. But the skill isn't really that... I mean, it is hard, but it's not the hardest thing in the world. It's not like being the fly half. And if you have two fly halves, you can play two fly halves in the same team. You can play at 12, you can play 15, you can do all sorts with fly halves.
Also on the scrum half is the fact that you tend to need more of them in your squad, which might dilute the amount you spend.
Maybe. So for me, it'd probably be hooker. The props are too valuable, second rows are too valuable. Centres, I imagine, you could pick up quite cheaply, even though there's two of them.
And moving up to the highest?
Highest paid? It must be fly half. It's always fly half. Always fly half. But then it'd be second row. Or centre prop. Second row.
Phil.
So, we've got, in front of me, I've got 21-22, which is the preceding season, and 22-23. Okay. So, not this season, the last season. Last time around, hooker was the lowest, followed by scrum half, followed by wing. Actually, no, tell a lie. Followed by prop was the third lowest last time. It's slightly changed round. Scrum half is the lowest now. Wing Correct. Is second what? Lowest, and wing? Hooker is third lowest, with prop fourth lowest. Now, there are only eight positions, so that means prop fourth lowest is also fifth highest. So it's right in the middle of things. But the money,
yeah.
Scrum half being the lowest, 121k, wing 127, hooker 128, prop 143, back row 159, full back 170, lock 175, centre in second highest,
wow,
179, and fly half kind of 40 grand above anyone else, yeah, on average.
The thing is, this is the average by the mean, and you've got, I'm thinking in that extra squad, Henry Slade will be on way more than anyone else.
Well, Andre Esterhazy
and Quinns
will be on big
the
money.
The top 20 players by pay would give you a better idea of what the positions are worth.
So they do give you the top, it might be the top 15, because they give you, yeah, it's the top 15.
They don't tell you who they are, though, do they?
They don't tell you who, and they don't tell you what position they are. Yeah. But you can normally guess.
Finn Russell's number one.
So there are 50 in 23 seasons, so last season, there were still 15 excluded players. This was when we were down to 10 teams, because it ignores the Wasps, London Irish and Worcester, who went bump at various stages of this season. But six clubs still had two excluded players because of the grandfather rights. Three clubs only had one, and one club that year did not need to nominate an excluded player.
Newcastle
could be, Exeter's more likely to be this
season.
That
would have been Hogg.
Yeah, it would have been Hogg and one of their England boys.
Yeah.
But the average for the excluded players, if we've just said the average fly half is 217,000, and they are by far the best paid position on average, what is the average for the excluded player?
I'm going to say it's not as high as we think, 550.
It's 510.
Oh, really?
For the excluded player. But the average income of the top 15 earners is 60k higher than that. So there are players on significantly more than 500k counting towards some team's salary caps.
So the reason for that would be players that have moved in their first year. So George Ford.
Yeah.
They'll have an excluded player, and that will just make George Ford a bit cheaper.
Ford or Genge or...
Genge would be another one, yeah.
Or sinks even, yeah.
That's such a terrible way to spend your money. I mean, you're not going to fly half, but bloody hell, on props. Well,
this does show that there are several players earning significantly more than 500k who are not eligible to be in excluded players.
AJ McGinty,
they are taking more than 10% of your total salary cap.
Wow.
So 5 million salary cap. They're earning more than 500k on per player.
Wow. So what do you reckon? I'm just thinking who those guys. So if you had, I don't know, Owen Farrell is your marquee player at Saracens, then one of those could be Maro Itoji.
Yeah, Saracens will have had two in this season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Saracens probably will have had two, but they might have had another player who's not. In Bristol, you might have three of them. Semi Randrandra in this season, Randrandra, Piatau, Luatua, Genge, and sinks, and was AJ in this season as well? So you can, you could, they can only possibly have two of those six. So you could have up to four players.
I don't think
they could be commanding 40%.
McGinty and Genge couldn't have been marquee players.
Or maybe Sink's been there long enough.
Yeah, so they couldn't have been. So they would have to be. But even if they were eligible, they've still got six of those players. Yeah. So even if they were eligible, you can only have two of them.
One of Sale's marquee players, Rob Dupree.
Is it?
And how Rob Dupree chooses to spend all of his money if he wants to help out his brothers that are on tiny amounts of money.
Sale might have two of them, right? So maybe A. Dupree is a marquee. Johnny Hill's not cheap.
Johnny Hill's not cheap.
He can't be a marquee.
So those are guys who could be taking up more than 10% of the available budget for one guy.
Bath must have somebody ridiculous. No, maybe not. No. So how many players do you think are
some of the
high paid, but outside of the salary cap?
You don't know exactly. But there must be at least three or four, just based on the numbers. And it could even be more than that to shift it by. Because we're only talking about 15 players in the excluded bracket that averages 510K. When you look at the top 15 players, to the top 15 earners, whether they're excluded or not, it jumps to 570K. So there's 60 grand, more than 10% swing just in that movement.
There you go. I quite like that.
I would like to see this broken down. I'd like to see.
They should just put the names on it. We need to have the names of the players are.
We know there's however many new players in the NFL. We know what every single one of them is earning.
Yeah,
yeah.
With the draft, have you watched any of the draft?
No, I know who's been drafted.
It's hilarious just watching the outfits.
Oh, the suits are amazing.
The suits, are incredible. The bling, the sunglasses. It is hilarious to watch.
Yeah. Right. And it ages well, doesn't it? So if you look at like drafts from 15 years ago, all the outfits have aged perfectly.
Timeless tailoring.
Absolutely.
Some of the names of those players
It's not the names, it's the amount of buttons that they get on the jackets. Big men. 26 button suits.
Yeah.
So some of the shifts as well, because while you don't get the kind of median and mode, they do give you a distribution of salaries by position. So you can see, for example, that no hookers are paid more than 350K. There are no wingers paid more than 300K in this season just gone. So there was one scrum half paid over 400K who has now disappeared. So in the 21-22 season, there was one scrum half paid over 400K.
So he's either on a new deal, it's not Faf de Klerk.
Yeah, did Faf go before that? Did Nick White go before that?
Yeah, they both went year before last.
Or someone who's had a very good 400K plus deal for a scrum half has now elapsed.
Youngs, Kerr, no.
I can't think of who that would be.
Ben Spencer.
The two highest profile would be Faf or Nick White. In the last 5 years, would be Faf or Nick White.
That's like a Faf number to me.
That's a 21-22 season.
I saw Rafi Quirk the other night, and he's still dead normal as anything, so it's definitely not him.
Definitely not him.
So Faf did leave that year. So at the end of the 22 season, it must be Faf. So Faf was on 400K. You can infer from that.
That's a lot of rand.
There's a lot of farmland.
I've been booking stuff for my trip to South Africa, and it's.
Do you have to book anything for South Africa? It seems like it's pretty well catered for.
I've had some fantastic offers. The one in particular, there's one company that got in touch that someone working at their company saw that has been watching my videos, reached out. All I'll say is I would travel to South Africa just to have the 3 days at this place.
Wow.
It's out of this world. So, yeah, I'm.
When are you heading off?
End of June.
Very nice.
Well, end of June for the first trip, and then end of August for the second trip.
Awesome.
Excellent stuff.
That'd be fantastic.
And one thing, I thought I'm going to be spending some time in Cape Town on the second trip. I'm going to try and catch up, get Ben Loader, because
he's at Stormers.
Because he's doing brilliantly at Stormers.
Mm.
Yeah.
I bet that's a I bet he's having fun out there.
While we're talking about money, it's an apt moment to just mention this email.
Beardmore and Co.
Beardmore and Co. Beardmore to the power of four financial advisors.
Get in contact.
LinkedIn, JB, is where you can catch him. Contactedchasers@gmail.com is where you can get in touch with us on email. And for more content, patreon.com/eggchasers. And thank you very much to the people that help keep the lights on, show you support. And it's like a quarter of a pint at today's prices.
We need to put our prices up.
But we really appreciate it. But we got an email here, contactedchasers@gmail.com, from Ollie Poole.
Oh, okay.
Now, lots of people very much enjoyed the episode of Charlie Morgan last week in light of his article in The Telegraph talking about money being spent at the community, quote-unquote, level of the game. And I thought Ollie Poole actually makes a really good point here in his email.
But Ollie Poole and Kirk are getting some airtime on this. Friends
well,
of the
pod. If you take a sailing, you will get airtime.
Yes, okay. Very true.
Ollie says, loved Charlie Morgan pod, blah, blah, blah. But, in capital letters, I would really like to have heard one of you making the case that it's wrong or a stupid idea to be paying players in the first place at the quote-unquote community level. Maybe it's fair enough at the top level, because the market is such that people will pay to watch the rugby they produce, and that, in theory at least, is a self-sustaining product. Yeah, I think highlights the fact that's not really the case. But yes, take the point. But at the lower levels, the only reason clubs can fund payments to players is because someone, quite possibly a volunteer, has managed to get in sufficient sponsorship. And that money comes from sponsors who are doing it not for the commercial gain, but for the love of rugby and or the club itself. All the money those sponsors contribute should really be going into facilities, not being siphoned off by the top level players, which is, to be fair, a point Tim did suggest at one point. I was just about to say, I did say this. If you ask yourselves, what is rugby for, you will come up with various excellent answers, and I bet none of them will be, it's a necessary mechanism for allocating resources away from sponsors and towards the players who happen to be the best at the game. Surely the money spent to pay players can keep club X in level 4 rather than level 5 is little more than money wasted on league table vanity. Not least because that money is cancelled out by all the other clubs trying to do the same thing. Rugby is not a rich sport, and it could and should be doing much more sensible things with this money than paying people to play who it would generally do it for free anyway.
Well,
and they wouldn't. If they wouldn't, then that's what's wrong with them. Bring back amateur status. P.S. The fact that higher level rugby clubs have a long away trips is not an argument for paying players to go on those trips. It's an argument for the RFU either fully paying for travel or, much more sensibly, changing the system, league structure, which necessitates such long away trips.
Get rid of the national leagues. I agree. I totally agree with that. Have it all regional. I'm going to disagree.
Really, really well made point.
Well, yeah, but he's wrong. So here are a few things that I would say. So there are good ways and bad ways to pay players. So we know what the bad way looks like. You just have a standard match fee and you use your match fee to attract your players in. I don't think that's good, but if you want to waste your money that way, you may waste your money that way. I don't have a problem. There is another type which people don't really appreciate, and that's that sort of like the support mechanism. Now, I know for a fact Broughton Park did pay players when I played there, for a fact that they did. But they didn't do it in a bad way. It wasn't like the players came there for money. But if a guy had, I mean, there's two examples that I can think of when they paid guys, and it wasn't to keep them there. They would have played anyway, but they couldn't have played that particular game or those games without that money. So we had one guy on shift work who we helped out occasionally, and it didn't come from club funds either. I've seen this in a few clubs, which is basically a bunch of old boys who really enjoy their rugby and quite like the lads, don't mind chucking a few quid in. Now, sometimes that is literally pound notes in someone's pocket, but we're not talking much, just enough to make sure that they didn't have to take a shift on a Saturday. And the other one is, you know, the purchasing of beer. And I think those two things, I mean, it's not the same as...
No, I think
like 150 a game.
I think you can say there will be grey areas and times at which, like you're saying, but to Ollie's broader point, it actually, if you started from the top and went, you're the RFU, we want to try and make rugby sustainable, cut down the travel, or find a way to pay it if you think it's that important that, but back in my day, on Phil's day, Sedgley Park travel to Red Ruth, if you think it's that important, well, pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that, with those points too. I'd also say, though, if you've got a 6-year plan, and you want to get your club to the very top.
Well, then forget it, because you're not going to be allowed to get to the top.
The Championship.
They'll find a way to stop you.
Well, you want to get to the Championship, say, right? You've got to pay. If that's where you want to be, you want to be at the Championship, you've got to pay.
Do you have to pay at level 8 if you aspire to be at level 2? I would probably agree with Ollie and disagree with that and say build a culture and build a club which works for its community so that you thrive at level 8 and then you build it up as you go through the leagues.
There's also downsides to it. You won't have a second team. Like you won't have much of much substance underneath that club. But if you want to get there quickly, you've got to pay, and you've got to pay at level 8.
And if you shoot for level 2 when you're at level 8, but when you get to level 4, think the landscape changes.
Yeah,
your benefactor dies or whatever, and his kids gets divorced. Whatever it may be, then the club is completely screwed.
Yep.
And all that money that's invested that could have...
Well, it was never invested, it was spent.
Well, yeah, all that money, suddenly becomes money that was spent, not invested.
But there again, it was never the club's money in the first place, so who cares?
Well, that's Ollie's point. Yeah. That's just a vanity project if you're doing it like that.
Yeah, but it is a vanity project. It's all a vanity project.
Which I think I said this on the Charlie Morgan pod, I would never do that, I would never recommend anyone does that, but I wouldn't want to legislate against it. But I think the best thing is what Ollie suggests. Best thing for any club would be what Ollie suggests, which is the invest in the facilities and build it sustainably.
If
the RFU support that by simplifying the league structure or localising the league structure, that's probably for the benefit of everyone.
Yeah, and I said things like, I said, why don't you put a gym in? And give the players free access to the gym.
4G facilities so you can train more comfortably and better.
Then you also have an asset which other club members can use or you can generate money from.
Yes.
And I said the same thing. Give lads money, give them jugs of beer after a game.
Yep.
Because what that does, that is spending money on them, yes, and it's spending, not investing. But you create a nice atmosphere in the clubhouse with players that don't just leave after full time, stick around, and then that is like a gravitational pull that drags the members, drags them, they bring their friends along to the next one, and it becomes a place that...
Well, Andy Northey of...
Andy Northey.
Yeah, when I went for a quick beer with him after the LSH game.
Axe.
I think we drew. And he introduced me to LSH's keg of beer. So the keg of beer is supplied by a sponsor and players pay £1 for a pint from the keg of beer. Now that's cool because it's subsidised and that's the sort of thing you need.
The beer, having a free beer when you've earned it by playing rugby...
Is the best tasting beer you'll ever have.
Yeah, or a £1 beer. It tastes amazing as well with your mates.
Can I disagree and say that there is one beer that tastes better than a post-game rugby beer?
Is it an Overtone DDH IPA?
I mean...
Poured down someone's crack into a mouth.
No, I walked out of the Broughton Park changing room when they started doing anal shots. No, it's, and I haven't played in years and years and years, maybe 15 years, but a post-cricket pint is incredible.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Oh, hold on a minute. We need to just pause this. Oh, my word.
Well, well, well. We're more influential than we think.
We are. Can I just say, we are incredibly influential.
Aren't I?
I mean, JB
has just passed the phone to Tim and I've not read it.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that's some firefighting going on in real time.
Wow.
We'll come back to that. Shall we come back to it later?
That might be Patreon pod.
That might be, mightn't it?
Wow.
Do you think...
I've not read it.
I've not read it fully.
With the individual in question, because we've all... no. we probably won't cover that ground on this podcast again. Now.
We have already... Well... Or do we? I think we should cover that now. We've received that on this podcast.
But now we've given away the fact that that person will have messaged JB. And can we do that? Is that the wrong thing to do? Well, he sent it.
We'll come back to it.
Because wow.
Okay.
I mean, that is a tease and a half. That
isn't it?
I'll just say at this point, hi to the people that have jumped forward in the podcast. To go and find out what that's about and are now coming back.
Yeah. Wow. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So back to Ollie's point about vanity project. Most rugby is a vanity project. So let's just start with the fact that we do try and disguise it's about family and community and skills and, you know, ownership and, you know, yeah, to a degree, but it's also about being the biggest, strongest, hardest guy in the town, in the village, on the field, and getting all of your recognition that way. That's kind of why we do it. I mean, there is definitely... I mean, I spent all my 20s telling everyone that is a rugby player because it is the most interesting thing and the thing that I was most proud about. And the better you are, you know, the more proud of it you become.
Now it's CrossFitter.
Now it's CrossFitter, of course. but, you know, that is... It is a vanity thing. You know, that's why lads go to the gym. That's why lads hit hard. That's why they do all these things. And as you get older and you're not able to... contribute to your team in that way, you might want to contribute to them by coaching or funding. And I have no problem with it. I think it's all part of
you're right about that vanity thing until you get so good that you don't have to say anything. Peter Steph de Toy doesn't go around talking about being a rugby player. He just walks around just the fact that knowing.
Look at him. I mean, even Eben Etzebeth, we all know he's good. But are you telling me he doesn't do extra arm work for show? Are you?
Yeah, do you reckon, like, just in his private moments when he's alone, Eben Etzebeth just stands, he must just admire himself. He must just go, look at me.
Yeah.
Just look at me.
Undoubtedly.
I would. No question.
Like Dolph Lundgren in the 80s and 90s.
Dolph Lundgren in the 80s.
Did I make the point this week?
Yes, you did.
I sort of sent a gif of Dolph Lundgren dancing. It looked like he's in California or somewhere in LA. Just dancing on a stage. I was like, just for 5 minutes, just stop and reflect what it would be like to have a day in the life of Dolph, you know, peak Dolph Lundgren. When 25, by the way, not just 25 and handsome and famous and massive, but also no social media and phones.
Yes. Like,
what could he and did he get away with? I mean, what did he get away with? I don't know. But what could he get away with? That's probably a better question. My word.
It's not even get away with. It's just what could he achieve in a day?
Well, there's this amazing clip, right? And maybe I misremembered it because I'm so in love with the clip. But it was Ayrton Senna. And Ayrton Senna is on his stage. I think it's in the Senna documentary. He's on a stage in... I don't know where he is. There's thousands of people watching him. He's been interviewed by this absolutely gorgeous presenter. And I'm pretty sure he whispers in her ear something like, shall we go out tonight? Or, you know, something absolutely ridiculous. And she obviously goes, absolutely,
of course,
yes.
Yeah, where are you taking me?
Yeah, meanwhile, a few years ago, we had something similar, didn't we, with Chris Gayle? Propositioning and it's like the most outrageous thing anyone's ever seen. How dare Chris, you know, I mean, there is a point, I guess, but you know, look at the difference in attitudes then when Ayrton Senna could do basically whatever he wants and Chris Gayle is like an absolute horror show, which he probably is, but you know, I'm down for it.
Oh, right, where were we? Do we need to have a conversation about that text message off air and decide how we are going to address it?
I think let's finish the podcast, then have a chat about it, and then maybe hit record again, depending on what we want to do.
Okay.
But as for the rest of that Harlequins Northampton game, firstly, 60,000 people were there.
Yeah,
fair play. I doubt 60,000 tickets were sold. In fact, I know that wasn't the case. They definitely sold 59,998 because my brother and my nephew. Went because he's part of Teddington Rugby Club, and they did a big event over the bridge at the Stoop, It was a really good idea, actually. They got loads and loads of local kids and local clubs to come along, play some games at the Stoop.
Awesome.
And then walk across with the team.
Fantastic.
Across the bridge. It was a really nice touch. So I think there were many, many people. But what a great... That's just outreach, isn't it? It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Great event.
Great spectacle as well.
Yeah,
because
brilliant.
Two teams want to play rugby. Some awesome tries scored. Some awesome skill levels. And fair play to Quinns. Fair play to Quinns doing it with three yellow cards. Perhaps should have been four. Although maybe we'll get into that at another point. And it's good to see Luke Northmore back again. Yeah. Because a couple of seasons ago, it feels like he'd been out for ages. And Oscar Beard has maybe taken some of that limelight. But a couple of seasons ago, he was playing superb rugby. And would push it and got into some of the England training camps.
Yep.
And I think he'll be pushing back there because he's such a good player. And can cover centre and wing.
Yeah, they mentioned Will Joseph as well. Another guy who's not really had much game time lately. They've got some talent at home.
Lennox Anyanwu hasn't been seen for a while.
Or Nick David, who I really rate. And he's when he plays, he looks fine.
Tyrone Green's looking class.
Yeah.
God, they've got some talent in the outside backs there. So Esther Hazen's going next season, isn't he?
Going back to the Sharks.
So he is a
point of difference, though, isn't he? Because everyone else is good, but they're all kind of similar. He's completely different.
Yeah, and Lennox Anyanwu, when Esther Hazen's not been available, he's played a lot in that 12 berth. So it'd be good to see him get more game time.
And we're going to learn a lot about Marcus Smith without Andre Esther Hazen.
Without the get-out-of-jail-free card that's next to him, both in attack and defence.
Yes.
I wonder if they just change things around a bit, because, of course, having a huge man like that is not unusual if you pull him from the pack. So will they just change their system somewhat? Will they rely on the pack to do more of the Esther Hazen role?
Dom Brandt runs a lot of inside centre lines.
Yeah,
he's playing really well.
I would have Esther Hazen in every position over Dom Brandt. Eight, flanker, second row. But yeah, he could do that role. I mean, I guess it's how they set up and what they do with their personnel, because they've got so much talent.
I'm just looking at the Quinns confirmed signings for next season. So they're losing three players. So Lovejoy Choatama goes to Bristol.
Another London Irish front row player.
Esther Hazen goes back to South Africa, goes to the Sharks. Louis Leiner goes to Benetton. They've not had any confirmed signings for next season, which is...
They do seem a bit heavy, though, on numbers.
Yeah, but I guess to the point on Esther Hazen, so they've got plenty of options in many positions. To the point on Esther Hazen, there is very few players in the world like him.
Yeah.
They do not have a like-for-like replacement in the team. And Yamwu is a solid player that, from what we've seen of him, but he's not Esther Hazen size or physicality, because very few people in the world are.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's whether they bring someone like for like. Because, other than that, you'd say that losing Louis Leiner, they can definitely cope with that. Losing Choatama, they can definitely cope with that. Esther Hazen is different.
Can I pinch that Broughton Park tie for today?
Of course you can.
I've lost
in
mine.
In fact, if you want... well, that's not a Broughton Park tie, that's a Neath tie.
All right.
But if you
close
want,
enough.
Right. I will get my...
Sorry.
125 US centenary tie out for you.
That'd be lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want a Broughton Park shirt too?
I'd love it.
There, you can have it.
Amazing, because I couldn't find my tie this morning. Just while we're talking about Northampton Harlequins as well, I think it's important to point out, whilst we've already said what we think about the Danicare non-yellow, Northampton Saints were not accurate. They butchered so many opportunities, and the as Phil would always say, there's never a single point of failure. Mm. If Northampton want to look at, and I guarantee, I don't know what the fans will be saying, but in the team meeting on Monday, it will be... They won't be mentioning that yellow card, and they'll be saying we should have won the game. They butchered some gilt-edged opportunities.
Yeah,
and we're not as good as they normally are.
No, very un-Northampton-ish. And actually, they did set up in quite a interesting way. They played Litchfield at 12, which I don't think I've seen him play 12.
I haven't seen a 12 that shape since Tom Young's. I love it.
Yeah,
like he's a bowling ball of it.
I think I pointed this out a few weeks ago. He's substantial. And he's playing on the wing. They seem to be able to move around a lot of players into a lot of places. Mm. So I tell you who is quite Esther Hazen-like, if they could get their hands on him, is Odendel at Northampton. They've got three out-and-out centres, and if they're not available, they just tend to mix things up, and it seems to work fine.
Mm.
Who was 13 for Northampton?
Freeman.
I hardly saw him at all this game.
Yeah, he was quite quiet.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't see him once. Yeah, Northampton looked okay.
I'm just looking at his stats. Tommy Freeman, 12 metres run from three carries, which is not like Freeman at all.
Nope.
No clean breaks, no defenders beaten, no offloads.
Yeah, that's very un-Tommy Freeman.
I'm trying to think, he didn't go off injured early on, did he?
No.
He played.
Not that I remember.
Yeah, he played most of the game.
Yeah.
That is highly unusual.
Yeah. Jumping around the matches, did you see any URC, either results or matches?
No. I saw Ulster result.
That was a great result for them.
So we've had a complaint on email. Have you seen it?
No.
About my attitude towards the Welsh teams. And that I'm putting people off listening because I'm so negative about Wales. Did Welsh teams do anything good this week?
Dragons were competitive in a defeat against Connacht.
Oh, wonderful.
Cardiff got spanked by Edinburgh at home, and Ospreys lost away in
South Africa, wasn't it? Oh, yeah, Bulls had 61 points put on
61 points
by the Bulls.
So, and Scarlets lost to Sharks. So, four defeats.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it? It's pretty good.
Ospreys could still qualify.
You have to stop being positive.
Ospreys could still qualify for top eight.
Right.
And they look all right. They've got the most metal out of all the Welsh teams. But no, I was just going to give you the opportunity, JB. The floor is yours.
Yeah.
Leinster sent a really weakened team.
Did they win?
To Cape Town. And disrespected the URC competition. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to lay into Leinster.
So actually, one of the things I was going to say, and I'm not going to say anything about Leinster, I was going to say something about Harlequins and Northampton. Like, what a joy it was to see these two teams put out full ball teams as much as they could on the weekend before a semi-final. And I think, actually, they should both be praised by that. But I didn't really want to bring up Bullsgate again, but I'm glad you mentioned it. Leinster are top of the table, yeah?
Not anymore.
They've got a home semi-final sort of 4-2, probably?
Potentially, maybe not.
Probably, they're only 1 point ahead of Munster.
I mean, so long as they get to where they need to go, that's fine. And they lost this weekend?
Hammered. Yeah. 42-12.
Well, I mean, league games are different. There's no two ways about it because it's not a knockout game. I think Leinster should be ashamed of themselves, not for this one, but when they sent a slightly weakened rotated team.
Semi-final against Munster.
Yeah, that's an embarrassment.
That was hubris.
Yeah, it's absolute hubris. They absolutely deserve both barrels for that. For the league, who cares? I mean, if you're in control and you know what your destiny is, that's fine. A cup semi-final is... It's a disgrace, isn't it?
Well, I guess the parallel would be, and a Bulls fan would argue, well, we weren't in a position to get where we need to in the league, unlike Leinster. So,
where are they now?
They're fifth.
Right, so they're not where they need to be anyway.
Bulls, or are they fourth? They are fourth.
They're fourth.
And they've got a 6-point cushion to fifth.
Yeah, so they're probably, you think, going to finish top four, get a home match in the...
In the knockout,
but they
will play the highest ranked of the bottom four.
Yeah.
So Leinster, they have slipped into second place. Glasgow are top.
Glasgow
still have to go to South Africa.
They've got a fortnight in South Africa, yeah.
Yeah.
Or a week, yeah.
Yeah, two games.
So I don't follow any URC, but it does sound like...
It's getting interesting.
Your fortnight in South Africa doesn't sound comfortable.
No, it's going which to be tough. Is why it's impressive. Munster managing to get two wins in South Africa is impressive.
And they took a full strength team, went for it, and won.
Yeah.
So fair play to Munster.
And Tadhg Burn and RG Snaiman, is there a better club rugby lock combination anywhere?
Well, when they play together, I mean, it's awesome. It is awesome. But when they don't, it's more difficult.
The balance in those twos is just amazing as well.
Yeah.
They're all good. I'm trying to think of other combos. I mean, Toulouse have got a fearsome... actually, Leinster's...
Itoji and Cruz back in the day, maybe.
Well, Leinster's...
But I think I'd take Byrne and Snyman over those.
I mean, Ryan and McCarthy still developing. They're not the finished article about those two boys. There must be someone else that's impressive.
I don't think there is.
That could be the best, yeah.
That's the best club.
They're not as good as these boys, but I think a couple of years' time, we might be looking at Martin and Chesham going, yeah. They're two boys.
That's a good show. They are not there yet.
No, I can't think of anyone really.
No.
Toulouse, Arnold's, and whoever.
It can't be. There you go. Is it the best ever? it, like, again, they've not played together that much. But assuming they're fit and firing and both in top four, is there a better lot combination, or what are the best combination? Is there a better combination that you can remember in club rugby on colours?
So on paper, they're good, but Steyman has played a dozen times in however many years, 3 years. So, yeah, on paper, sensational.
But he's fit for the money matches at the minute.
He'll be fit for Leinster, fit for Nienaber.
Yeah, who is Will Skelton's partner?
Local lad, isn't it? La Rochelle.
Begins with an L. I'm sure it has a Q in it as well.
Oh,
don't know.
Don't know, yeah, you might be...
Yeah, the fact that we don't... It doesn't immediately jump out.
There you go.
So his partner today, they're playing Toulon today, is Dylan.
Oh, Irish lock. That pains me, you mentioning that, and the fact that I just got my notification going, your boarding will start soon. I'm not in La Rochelle now.
Is this the game you're meant to be going to?
I was meant to be going to that game tonight.
Oh.
But I cancelled it because of the cup final. Well, got moved by Lancashire Rugby back a week.
Oh.
I made the right call.
You did make the right call. Without a shadow of a doubt. There'll be other La Rochelle games, there'll be plenty of them.
Yeah. And I'm going to my beloved Bayonne in a month. First week of June.
Right, so...
Yeah, anyway.
Did anyone see Saracen's Bath?
Yes.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Owen Farrell's awesome. He was there. Well...
I wasn't expecting you to say that.
We've already talked about the fly half.
Confirmation bias. If
Finn Russell had been playing, I would back Bath to have snuck that one.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
And the fact that Saracens had Owen Farrell meant that they did sneak this one. That was probably the difference between the two teams.
First half was a weird old game.
Yeah, it was a weird game.
First half was incredibly cagey.
Yeah.
Incredibly. There was
box kicks for days.
Yeah, I've never seen more box kicks. It was... Box kick, try and tap it back onto your side. If it's unsuccessful, set up, box kick, try and tap it back to your side. Over and over again, Saracen scored the two tries, the Tom Parton try early on, who almost got a second one when he tried to go round Thokunasinghe, who's looking good, is Parton. Yeah. Shegun got the second try right on half time when, who was in the bin? Oh, I can't remember who went into the bin. Marrow. Marrow was in the bin. The last second in the first half, Shegun scored that try. Lovely Faz kind of half pump and little dink.
Pump fake and dink.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was lovely.
And then second half, it was a totally different game. Bath turned up the power. Their scrum started dominating. Their driving maul started dominating. And I was certain Bath were going to win that.
Yeah.
Certain they were. And Saracens... on the back of an amazing Faz offload, Tompkins step, the hooker, Theo Dan break.
Theo Dan, I'll tell you
that
what.
That was an awesome line.
He is pushing Jamie George for a starting spot. He is having such influential cameos off the bench.
Yeah.
He's exactly what you need, isn't it? But you need two hookers.
But he just ends, he's the destroyer of worlds defensively.
Oof.
And he does really cool things in attack. He's a serious player.
He was on that break, that line he cut from inside his own 22 that led to the winning penalty. It was Matt Gallagher trying to chase him and he gave up because the O'Dan was accelerating away from him, a back three player.
Mm.
So that was awesome. When it looked like Bath were going to win, another slight moment of refereeing decision or a decision not being looked at twice. The Thomas Dutoy try was 100% a double movement.
I agree.
He was stopped. He then drives with his legs like a slug, if that's... slugs don't have legs, but drove with the lower... His body was prone on the floor and he drives his legs up to get his bum up into the air to push his...
Slithering.
He slithered along the floor to score. There is no way that should have been a try.
I agree.
But Bath did deserve to come back into the game.
What I did love about this game, particularly the second half, but actually the whole game was a bit like this, but it's getting easier for teams, and again, this is more so the second half, it's getting easier and easier for teams to get into 22s because the attacking play is really good.
Yeah.
But that last 5-10 metres is
hard.
So hard to do.
It's that compression of the defence, isn't it? So as soon as you break that line, that's when you need to score. That might actually be the secret to...
To lose.
Well, not to lose, I was going to say Northampton and Quins. it's the ability to break the line, but then start finishing off before you get into 22.
Before you get to the 20, yeah. Actually, score, and I think Northampton do score a lot of tries directly from inside their own half.
Yeah, and strike play tries.
Yeah, and like, very much like Toulouse, once they make a line break,
they finish.
They finish.
Mm. So, yeah, it was good. And that Saracens win, it puts it back in their favour. Because they were below Bath, they are now 1 point above Bath. So it's in their control. They may, as you said earlier in the show, again. It's their last chance to win it for several years, this.
I just can't believe it.
Too old, no scrum. And this game, when, what's his name, Griffin, is it Archie Griffin?
Archie Griffin, yeah.
The young
Welsh prop.
Welsh tight head prop who had... He never started a game for Bath in the Premiership before he played for Wales at Twickenham. When he came on, he looked good. He was putting all sorts of pressure on that Saracen scrum.
Excellent.
Next week's, 2 weeks' time is the Maylands Bowl. Bristol v Saracens.
Bristol win that.
That's going to be tasty.
I can see Bristol winning that.
And then Saracens are going to have to play at home to a very motivated Sale team who will be playing for a top four spot.
Yeah, so Sale, if Sale are serious, they've got to win it.
Mm.
You know, whoever wins that is a serious team.
So yeah, it was a good game funny old game, but it was good and went down to the wire.
Saracens, for all the players they've lost, for everything they've been through, have still won the second most games in the Premiership this year. That's amazing, isn't it?
With
they
no scrum,
amazing outfit.
Oh, I will just say actually on that Saracens game, the last minute, so 2 or 3 minutes to go, so Faz gets that penalty in front of the posts. Bath kick off. Saracens immediately drop the ball. So Bath have the ball in Saracens 22 with 2 minutes left on the clock. Bath immediately drop the ball.
Yeah.
Saracens then drop the ball again.
Yeah.
And Bath drop it again. It was comical.
Yeah.
Absolutely comical. And that was Bath's chance. They had twice.
They had the ball enough for the ref to say advantage over on every occasion.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, and then lost it immediately.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. So Bath can't complain when
you do that. How did Tom Willis go? So I've been waiting for him to come good for Saracens. I thought he'd be a good
signing.
Didn't
really notice him. Like Phil said, the first half was so cagey, and I think Billy Vunipola came on after 50, so...
Brilliant. Yeah, there was... Just looking at his stats, he... Just about the best performing forward in terms of... Well, certainly in terms of defenders beaten... meters made, he was right up there, but it was a hard org. It was very, very physical and a lot of kicking. So it wasn't a day for any of the back rows to really. Like Ben Earl and Barbary, neither of them really stood out at all.
Yeah, Barbary does blow hot and cold though.
Barbary's best moment was a very good clearing kick from a turnover line out.
Exactly what you want from your ball carrying eight, isn't it?
Exactly
what you need.
But no, he carried hard. He hit hard. As did all of the back rows. So there's two lovely back rows. Hill, Underhill and Barbary.
Love that.
Gonzalez, Earl, Willis.
Love it.
Lovely. Like, Talon, good age profiles.
If you had to take three out of those six, which would you? What combination would you go with? You've got Hill, Underhill, Barbary, Gonzalez, Earl, Willis.
Earl's got to play.
Earl, Hill, Underhill.
Yeah.
Hill, Underhill, Earl. Yeah.
Yeah. I probably would do.
I hope the Ted Gonzalez is in the England squad because I quite like that as a six
Hill's
option.
A monster.
Yeah.
Absolute monster.
And he's
it's
one of those.
Just how quick he is.
Yeah.
But he's so big and he's physical. Massive. He's one of those who can, on his day, compare with like Chesham and Martin levels of size and physicality.
Underhill, Alfie Barbary, lovely names on paper. I mean, the chance of them being fit together all season for a long period of time, zero.
I'll tell you who's... I think he's having a really good season. I think he's playing some really good... And he played well in this game. Charlie Ewells. I really think he's having a good season. Every time I've seen him...
Says right things.
And he's... I can't recall this... So he had a few seasons ago, he had repeated high shots where just a yellow-red card magnet. He seems to have got that under control as well. He's playing some good stuff.
Should we briefly just touch on the two semi-finals in the Champions Cup?
Absolutely, we should.
So we've got Saturday, 5:30 p.m, Leinster against Northampton at Croke Park. Sold out in a few hours, 82,000.
That is amazing.
I've not got much hope for anyone. I mean, I'd love to think there's a chance. There's not a chance, is there?
I don't think there is a chance, though. The only chance is that Leinster haven't played and so are undercooked.
Score early. Northampton score early. And they've just got to keep scoring. They can't at any point.
They've got to roll the dice and go for it. Don't get a cagey. Go inside yourselves.
Don't play territory, right? Don't play the percentages. Don't do any of that shit. Run the ball. Try and score. And if you score early and often, you might silence the crowd. You might get Leinster to doubt themselves. And if you can turn it into a tit for tat kind of game.
You score, we score. You score, we score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be great. That is their only hope.
I fear that it will be... I think this will be... Northampton will be in touching distance until 50 minutes and then they'll get blown away.
Maybe.
So Northampton's pack have come on enormously.
Yeah.
Their tight five work compared to, say, 2-3 seasons ago is completely different. Can they cope with what is actually an international... And not just an international pack, one of the best international packs in the world.
Yeah, it's difficult, is it?
With Jack Conan on the bench.
Yeah.
And with...
Kelleher
on the bench.
In the quarterfinal, they had Josh van der Fleer on the bench.
It's insane. Yeah. So I only see that going one way.
I do. I'd love Northampton to make it really interesting, but...
Just got a score.
In fact, this semi-final weekend is a palate cleanser between the quarter-final and the final.
I gave Harlequins zero chance of going away to Bordeaux.
Agreed.
Now, Bordeaux were missing a few crucial players. And let's assume that Toulouse are not going to be missing the same level.
Chalabert is back. Guided your beloved Bordeaux to a comfortable win over my beloved Bayonne.
So that is good. For Bordeaux, not for the semi final.
No,
good for my beloved Bordeaux.
Toulouse v Quins.
I just can't see it.
No.
Lightning won't strike twice.
No,
but I'd love to see the two English teams do well.
Quins have got more of a chance than Northampton, I feel. God, imagine all English final after everything
that
the Premiership has been through.
That would be incredible.
That would be insane.
That could well be a repeat of the... Because it'd be the week after the Premiership semi-final, presumably.
Yeah.
So you could have back-to-back Harlequins-Northampton semi-final, Premiership and final in the...
Put some money on it.
In the Investec Champions Cup, as it's
I've
now
got quite a lot of boat money.
Right, guys, I need to go and get ready. We're getting on the...
Oh, just one last thing. Yeah. We spoke about salary caps before. Kind of interesting wrinkle. Do you know the elite team which has no salary cap? Always excluded from the salary cap.
Elite team club, so rugby.
It is a club. It is rugby.
Rugby league?
No, North Dorset Sevens.
good point.
We have no cap. So if you want to join as a social member or as a player... Email us straight away. We have got some emails and we are going to get back to you one day.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Like we're saying this at the end of the pod. Do a little one of your live reads for the start of the pod about North Dorset Sevens.
Because I'm going to have to do a live read now. I want to go out.
You don't have to do it now. You can do it later. We don't have to publish till late. Anyway, we're showing you how the sausage is made here.
Yeah. Okay, I'll think about it.
All right. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Patreon.com/eggchasers for more content. JB's on LinkedIn.
And we might get onto Patreon later for that thing.
Yes, we've got a great YouTube channel, and let's see if we can get on Patreon later, even for a short one, and we maybe discuss that text message you received.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I want to be able to share that at some point. We will share that.
Yep.
All right, let the boys end.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.